In order to ensure accurate copies of the inscription, Rawlinson dangled quite dangerously from the cliffs of the mountain. Once the cuneiform was deciphered, it became possible to read the small clay tablets that recorded myths and historical events. Some stories, such as that referring to a universal flood that destroyed humanity, seem to confirm the historicity of the Old Testament, and it generated even more enthusiasm for the study of these ancient cultures. Keep in mind that this is about the time when the historical accuracy of the Old Testament was being questioned as Darwin was promoting his idea of evolution. So there was definitely an interest in going to the lands that were described in the Bible, recovering evidence for those cultures in order to prove that the Bible was accurate. Once these cuneiform texts were found, however, illegal looting and targeted excavations looking specifically for text began in earnest, despite Ottoman attempts to prevent the export of many of these artifacts. A number of the texts that we will explore in this course were collected or looted during this early period of exploration. And the fact that no archaeological context survives leaves us with many unanswerable questions about the date, the purpose, the author, or the original location of the text. This was before the era of scientific excavations, so there was no training for archaeologists to record what they were digging through as they reached a cache of cuneiform texts, for example. The Germans began excavating at the city of Babylon, and they revealed the city of Hammurabi's time, which flourished in the 6th century BC, and they exported many examples from this particular city, for example, the Ishtar Gate, now in Berlin. It was in the early 20th century that the Germans, specifically Walter Andrei at Aschur, began to develop and employ a more scientific method of stratigraphical excavation and recording. We'll talk about what this method requires in the next lecture. Andrei's method set a new standard for archaeological field work, especially on mud brick construction. And again, we'll come to this in more detail next time. This scientific method, in conjunction with the ceramic typology of pottery developed by Sir Flinders Petrie, the discoverer of King Tutankhamun's tomb in Egypt, which occurred at about the same time, allowed archaeologists to begin to organize what it was they were finding, to establish a sense of chronology, to be able to note when cultures shifted. And so this is really the time when we start to see a historical framework being created for Mesopotamia. This era also represents a time when European museums were competing with each other for the most impressive collections. Museums would sponsor excavations to find objects, especially texts that related to biblical events, but anything that would enhance the prestige of their museum. And this ties in pretty closely to the idea of nationalism, empire, who controls what resources. And so most of the objects were being exported to European museums. We'll see an important shift in this practice after the modern nation of Iraq was created in 1921, the aftermath of World War I. This period between the world wars is probably the most intense archaeological activity that has revealed one of the most exciting periods in Mesopotamian archaeology. Many of the most spectacular and largest discoveries of cities, temples, and palaces date to this era.